Tuesday night. Sportsnet is Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Ailish and Justin leading with a PWHL game on the network tonight at 7 o'clock. New York at Montreal. We're going to chat with Renata Fast, Canadian Olympic gold medalist, and PWHL Toronto defenseman. She'll be participating in the PWHL All-Star Showcase, the 3-on-3 showcase here in Toronto during All-Star Weekend, February 1st. We're going to get a little bit of a look into Toronto. They haven't had the greatest of starts, but Renata, one of the leaders of the team, she's going to turn the ship around.
0-3, right?
Currently, yes.
It's gonna change soon. It's a shortened season. They got to get a win sooner than later.
They will. They're back in action tomorrow night. I'll be there, Mattamy Athletic Center. Frank Saravalli will join us momentarily. Leafs in action starting their West Coast road trip. McDavid versus Matthews tonight. Red Hot Oilers on a 10-game winning streak tonight. That's 9 p.m. regionally on our network. And I do believe Frank is already ready to rumble. Frank Saravalli of DailyFaceoff.com joins us. Frank, how's this going, buddy?
Pretty good, except for the Eagles. I'm doing all right.
Oh,
can we take a second there?
Let's take a sec.
What was the emotion there? Because
that
was a complete. It wasn't a collapse because it wasn't built. It was like a no-show. Like what's the reaction in Philly after last night's woeful performance?
It was more rage than anything, I think. When you have a team that starts 11-1, and I don't care, you know, what the actual games themselves looked like, but you have some really good teams that you beat along the way to get to that point, including the Cowboys the first time, mm-hmm. the Dolphins, a bunch of teams, the Bills, the big comeback that they had. I mean, they had set themselves up so nicely to then not even get a playoff home game and lose to Baker Mayfield. Like, I mean, it's not as bad as losing to the Packers, but it's pretty bad.
It was pretty bad. And Baker, I don't know if he was brilliant or lucky because Philadelphia's defense wasn't playing hard at all. But yeah, he was diming it just a little bit. Okay, let's go to the NHL. And the biggest news item today, I think, was Julian Breezeau coming out and saying that Steven Stamkos wouldn't be traded. What's the motive there? Why did Julian Breezeau take the tack that he took today? Is there some sentimentality there with Breezeau, or is this some sort of posturing, in your opinion, Frank?
No posturing, and I was actually surprised to see that people thought, Justin, that this was a really big story today in the sense that, yes, the Tampa Bay Lightning and Steven Stamkos have not been negotiating, but I had never, even at even the furthest distance in my brain, had ever connected a dot that at some point during the course of this year with the Lightning still very much in play to make the playoffs, might consider potentially moving Steven Stamkos at the deadline. Like, it was never on my radar. So the fact that it became a headline today, I was a little bit surprised. Why did it get brought up? Because naturally the first question that, Tampa Bay Lightning fans want to know is our captain going to be here? He's been here for so long. Will he be the guy that remains? And so, yes, they haven't negotiated, but I think they're a long way off from moving it.
I guess we're getting close to hot trade talk, so I'll add another one for you. Trevor Zegras, I know that after the Jamie Drysdale trade, there was a little bit of smoke. I wonder if that has dissipated at all with the injury, or is that something on the table that the Ducks would consider moving him? And would there be a great fit? I know we talked to the center depth is pretty nice in Anaheim.
Yeah, and adding Cutter Gauthier, I think, really kind of added some smoke to that fire. And look, the smoke has more or less cleared out for now because of the injury, 6 to 8 weeks. I mean, you're talking right at the trade deadline. And for a deal that I think if the Anaheim Ducks were moving Trevor Zegras, doesn't really make a lot of sense to do it at the deadline. Why chop off half the available teams that might be able to get in and be in the mix? Based on their current situation, you'd probably be considering a much more seismic trade in the offseason when you can reboot things a bit with your roster. So the reason why I added Trevor Zegras to my trade board is over the long haul, the long view that Pat Verbeek has for the Anaheim Ducks franchise, there's a lot of people really close to it that believe that Trevor Zegras doesn't fit that vision for how Pat Verbeek wants that Ducks team to play. They had the tough negotiation. Jamie Drysdale had a really tough negotiation. You see how that ended up turning out for Drysdale. He's in Philadelphia now. I don't think it's anything top of mind for the Ducks right at this exact moment in time, but they have the depth this summer that if they truly believe that is the case and he doesn't fit their vision, that that's certainly something that I think they'd revisit. And I think his name had already popped up in trade talks before that, that Pat Verbeek certainly wasn't shy in bringing that name up in talking to some teams.
It seems everyone has an opinion on Trevor Zegras. Would you expect a robust market for him? Like, what's the opinion among league circles? Is it a shared one, or is it one where you're trying to find a specific team here or a specific general manager that would value the things that Zegras brings?
It's a really good question, because I think it's polarizing depending on how you view him. There's some teams that look at him and say, he's kind of a one-dimensional player, someone that when he's not scoring, what exactly is he doing to help your team? And then I think there's kind of the more, I don't know if you want to call it a new school approach, but the thought process is, I don't really care how it happens. The guy is putting up back-to-back 60-point seasons. He's got creativity. He's got flair for the dramatic. He's someone that, you know, certainly could be one of those players that is a, you know, front and center face of your franchise guy, provided that he gets the proper support. And that part, to me, I'm way more interested, you know, in today's game of harnessing what a player really does well, as opposed to spending so much negative energy, you know, fretting about the things that he doesn't do well.
Yeah, don't ask John Tortorella about the Michigan or Trevor Zegras, but everyone else's opinion.
I'm not sure it'd work in Philly.
Yeah, I don't know if that one would work out. Maple Leafs are about to see one of the some of the best teams in hockey over this next stretch. I want to ask you about the Jets specifically. Kyle Connor returning from his absence. He was red hot for quite a while, of course, leading that team. I wonder how scary the Jets are, because we don't really give them enough respect, I think, because they, you know, quietly rose to stardom this year. I know Scheifele back on IR now, but you look at the addition of Kyle Connor and the Jets, I think we should be talking more about them.
I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I've been talking a lot about the incredible run that they've been on without allowing more than three goals in a game. I think it's up to 33 games now, if I'm not mistaken. It's insane. Wow. It's going back to the first week of November. And I think part of the reason why maybe people don't take the Jets more seriously is because they might look at a stat like that and say, oh, well, it's just all Connor Hellebuck. He's doing all of that. And I think that's probably pretty unfair. It's unfair to their defense, which has been pretty stout. Josh Morrissey has had a heck of a year. And then the other part is, look at their forward group and some of the pieces that they've been missing. You mentioned Kyle Connor and how long he was out. Mark Scheifele goes out, and all of a sudden Adam Lowry steps up and he's your first line center, and this team doesn't miss a beat. And I know Scheifele hasn't been out that long, and this is going to be a bit of a different test, but they've also done this in a year in which Nick Ehlers has been okay, but hasn't sort of been next level. So I think the Jets, the scary part to your, you know, your hint, Ailish, is that they've got another gear to get to, and that's the thing that I think the rest of the Western Conference may soon see.
Big one on Sportsnet West tonight, the Maple Leafs visiting the Edmonton Oilers. Always interesting when these two teams play, but this is the start of a road trip here for the Maple Leafs that might be a little bit ominous. You got the Western Canadian road trip plus the Kraken, and then it's the Jets on a home and home. So that's six tough games in a row here for the Maple Leafs. Given how they played over the weekend, is this something that may resemble a bit of a death march?
A death march seems a little harsh. I would say this is potentially season defining. Is tell me where this team stands. You've now had a really good, you know, measuring stick test against a team like the Colorado Avalanche, and they kind of felt and looked like they were on a different level, and Sheldon Keefe acknowledged that. You've also got a road trip in which you're going to find out probably a bit about Ilya Samsonov again. And really, I think the biggest question that the Maple Leafs have to solve for, at a time when you're starting to hear some rumblings again, is Sheldon Keefe's seat getting hotter, which personally I think is, it takes a back seat to some of the issues that this team has roster construction wise that they need to figure out. They're on track for 100 points, and 100 points in today's NHL really isn't all that impressive. And I'm not knocking their season, but what I'm saying is they need to decide and make a statement for themselves. Are we a team that deserves to go out and continue to add and make a huge deadline addition? Or are we just an also-ran that's part of the Stanley Cup playoffs? And I don't know exactly which category the Leafs are in yet, and I'm personally waiting to judge until after Brad Treliving makes the moves that he's going to at the deadline in order to properly assess this team. And I would take it one step further and say that Sheldon Keefe, we should wait to evaluate him until he has a proper roster that doesn't have a number two defenseman, two number fours, and three number sevens.
Do you think there's a personnel issue? Like, we saw all this line shuffling for the Red Wings game over the weekend. I don't know if that's a protest, but sometimes when a coach does something like that, takes that sort of tack, it could be in some ways a complaint. Do you think that he thinks that he's got enough with this team? And I know there's maybe moves coming, but is Sheldon Keefe saying something with those roster moves, in your opinion?
Good luck getting him to say it, if that's what he's thinking. But if I were sitting in his shoes, you know, looking at the roster that I have assembled in front of me right now, I wouldn't feel like I'm dealing with a full deck of cards. And you might look at it from a different perspective. And if you're David Quinn, or pick another coach in the NHL that's been incredible, Luke Richardson, shorthanded this year, you're going, what would this guy even be barking about, given, you know, some of the talent that's at his disposal? I think the roster part of it is one thing. I also think there's been an eye test part of this team that they've really struggled with. And it's not even so much, you know, compete or anything like that. I think it's more just like there's some fragility to this team that I think is, you know, it seems like at times you begin to pull at a thread, and the sweater sometimes seems to come unraveled kind of easily. That part of their game they need to figure out. I just got through the Eagles season where you saw them come completely undone, as we talked about off the top. But there's something to that when, you know, things aren't going well for this team, that it's not exactly an easy turnaround to get them out of it.
Yeah, and I think you mentioned it earlier, Justin and Frank, that this stretch here is going to be maybe litmus test, maybe a bear down and find some character. You got the Oilers tonight, a 10-game winning streak. Calgary Flames on Thursday. I mean, they've got 3 wins in a row. Could be 4 tonight on Sportsnet 1. I wonder for you, you look at this team, and I think if we recycled our conversation from 2 or 3 months ago, we were pretty sure that they would be sellers at the trade deadline. They looked like they were an absolute mess. But, you know, maybe they're closer to defining who they are. What do you think that their trade deadline direction is, and is it the same as it was a couple months ago?
Well, they're a scrappy team that's been grinding it out of late. And the fact that they started 2-7-1 and have climbed back above 500 now, really for the first time consistently this season, they've got a lot of interesting facets to their game. They're number one in the league in net penalty kill. That part of their game has been really good. Their goaltending from Jacob Markstrom has been excellent. I still look at this team right now and say, we were pretty sure earlier that they were going to be sellers, that you had your answer then. This is a team that's kind of barely above 500, still has 5 teams to jump over to get maybe that final 8th and final wild card spot. And then you look at it and you say, okay, so even if they are able to get in, does anyone authentically believe that this Flames team is a threat to do any damage in the playoffs? And I think everyone kind of, you know, uniformly shakes their head no. I think Craig Conroy, their GM, has his answer. I think he realizes that for a team and market that wants to be competitive in a 2 to 3 year window from now, as opposed to a full scale rebuild, that you can't trade all of your pending unrestricted free agents. You can't tear it all down, which is why I think it's still a pretty good bet that Noah Hanifin ends up re-signing. But the rest of it, I think their goal has to be to try and maximize as much value as they can between now and 53 days from now on March 8th at the deadline, because that's how this team is going to reboot. They've got to take some pieces and then flip them later this summer to go out and get quality pieces that they can put in their lineup in the short term, as opposed to having to draft and wait 5 years.
We're chatting with Frank Saravelli, president of hockey content at dailyfaceoff.com. Marc-Andre Fleury is an amazing hockey player. And I just think,
to say the least.
Yeah, he passes Patrick Waugh for second on all-time wins record. And you know, he's had a bit of a difficult, I guess, season getting there with that team, but he did. And then I saw today you were discussing maybe him being a potential trade target. And that surprised me because I hadn't even thought about Marc-Andre Fleury switching teams again or moving on to a different NHL organization. How likely is that? And, you know, when you, I guess it's a good reflection point of what his NHL legacy is after having accomplished something so great.
His legacy for number one is that he's going to go down as one of the most popular players of all time. When you have four different teams that you've played on and every team that you've been on says that you're the best guy in the world, that kind of stands out. You saw, I don't know if you saw that little clip that they had on Bally Sports last night where they had him thanking the post mid game after,
yes,
you know, a shot. It was like, that was quintessential Marc-Andre Fleury. Like, that's who he is someone that in the middle of the play, while chaos is going on around him, he turns around to rub and thank the post. I mean, that's epic. So that's the first part of his legacy. The second is two things that probably won't ever be broken. I don't think anyone is going to ever catch Marc-Andre Fleury at 1,000 games. He's the fourth person ever to do it. Think about just the pure math required. You need 20 years of 50 games or more. No, who's doing that? Who's coming into the NHL at 18 and going to go on a run like that? I'm sorry, I don't see it. Then the wins, and people were kind of bellyaching saying, well, what about the goalies of yesteryear that had all those ties? Why, you know, you're not comparing apples to apples. And I went back and I looked through all the numbers and go look at it. Let's just assume that 50% of those ties ended up being wins. Stack them up on some of the best of all time. They still don't get to 552. So good luck. It's a legacy that for the most part is going to be unmatched. And how likely is it? I haven't had a chance to ask him directly, but part of the reason why we haven't really thought too much about him potentially moving on is we didn't really see this coming for the Wild, who had back-to-back 100-point years, finally got their act together under John Hines, and then had every single core piece of their lineup go out. Kirill Kaprizov, Jared Spurgeon, then Philip Gustafson, which puts all the onus on Marc-Andre Fleury.
I feel like we need to test the he's an incredible human being in the four markets that he's played in a Canadian market. I feel like we need to see it. And there are actually maybe a couple options. I mean, the Leafs have been looking for a goaltender. It hasn't been a dominant run for goaltenders in Edmonton, to say the least, about that situation. Do either of those teams make any sense for Marc-Andre Fleury? And I get they'll love him in these markets too, but it might be a little bit more difficult in those markets if you're not playing well.
Different regime, but I think it was pretty close that Marc-Andre Fleury and Brandon Hagel at the time, they were the Leafs and Hawks, were deep in talks to pull something like that off, and it just never materialized. I don't think it was anything player-related that Knicks did. I think team-wise, they just weren't able to get over the hump, and I think that would have been something that, you know, potentially he could have been interested in. So it didn't end up working out. I'm not so sure that I see a team like the Oilers as a fit. Look, you never say never, but I think the Oilers have a few different fish to fry first before they try and figure out who's going to be 1B to Stuart Skinner.
Last one for you, Frank. It may be too early to talk about July 1, but I do want to know what is top of mind for you. There are a lot of interesting conversations that can start in earnest. July 1, Mitch Marner can sign a new deal or negotiate a new deal. Draisaitl, Patterson needs a new deal as well. Nick Ehlers can sign July 1. Which one's most fascinating for you? And Mikko Rantanen might be the answer.
No, it's not. It's actually Elias Patterson. I've sensed a growing frustration from the Canucks that they haven't been able to get more traction. The talks have been positive and amicable. Like, they've remained in constant communication. There hasn't been any freeze or anything like that. But Ian McIntyre had a great piece today on Sportsnet where he was in touch with Patrick Alvin, who basically said, hey, like, we'd like to get an answer here just because we've got to fill out this roster, not just for this year, but, you know, we want to make plans for the next few years, and we'd love to have a number that we can factor you in on, which is really making business, I think, a little bit more difficult, or I guess you could say in parentheses, unnecessarily difficult for the Canucks to do approaching the March 8th trade deadline. And now they're in a spot where the next question from Ian Mack was something like, you know, is this a little bit unusual for you that a star player of this caliber, where you have a team rolling out the red carpet and the Brinks truck, they're ready to do it. And the other side sort of isn't engaging. Well, yeah, he said it, this is maybe a little bit unusual. So great work by Ian out in Vancouver today. And that to me, like, I don't know that there's a bigger storyline heading into the summer than that.
Well, Frank, I don't know if you're going to watch any more football, but there's always room on the Bills bandwagon if you want to jump on board.
Join us.
No, yep. Okay.
Join us, Frank.
See you next year at NFL kickoff then. All right, Frank.
We didn't even get to the Brad Treliving Bowl on Thursday. I'm going out to Calgary.
Oh, you are? Wonderful.
See the Leafs live.
Okay, well, enjoy that. Maybe they'll work some magic on a trade or something while you're around and you can break it for us.
We'll get your scoops.
See what I can do.
We'll get your scoops. Thanks, Frank. Enjoy. Safe trip. And we'll talk to you next week.
See you guys.
That's Frank Saravelli, president of hockey content at dailyfaceoff.com.
It may be Elias Pettersson, but the Draisaitl thing fascinates me because he's still got two more years. Mm-hmm. McDavid has three. But Draisaitl having to make the decision first, and I know he's not going to do it in a silo and McDavid's not going to be involved and there's like not going to be any collaboration there. But Draisaitl having to make the decision on the Oilers before McDavid is interesting to me. Like, I expect it to get done. They brought in McDavid's agent to run the team now. But like, what does Draisaitl sign for? And then what does McDavid do after that?
I wonder how much this year plays into that. I mean, they're on a 10-game winning streak. The Maple Leafs are going to see them tonight. They are getting, they've turned it around. I don't know if it's the new coach. I don't know if it's, okay, you have Draisaitl and McDavid
cooking. A
healthy
McDavid.
You know, I think.
Some semblance of goaltending.
There can be something about, you know, just a new fresh face in that locker room or behind that bench. But they've certainly turned it around. They look like a threat to be, to put it lightly.
Yeah, but the start won't matter. And this 10-game winning streak won't matter if it looks the same in the playoffs. Like,
that's right.
The feelings going into summer are going to be the exact same if the Oilers crash out in, say, the second round. It's just going to feel the same. And what will that feel like for Leon Draisaitl? I guess we'll find out.
That game's on 9 p.m. tonight. It's regional. We've got it Toronto versus Edmonton. Okay, I actually have a couple best bets for tonight. I know you do as well.
Sure.
We'll get those in there quickly before we take a break. We're going to talk to Renata Fast after the break, PWHL Toronto, of course, and then Canadian Olympian. She's going to be an all-star at the NHL All-Star Weekend. The PWHL is going to have a 3-on-3 tournament, and she will be on the ice. So PWHL unders have been the moneymaker.
Our thing.
And they've caught up on to us. So out of 10 PWHL games which have been played so far, 8 of them have hit the under 5.5. 8 of them. Well, now the under 5.5 tonight between Montreal and New York, which we have on Sportsnet in about 30 minutes, is minus 170 for the under. So I think they have caught on. And so I'm going to just not play that one tonight because...
That's fair. You got to lay a lot to do
I
that.
Do think Montreal, though, hosting New York will get the win. That's also my bias. But they were robbed from an OT win in their home opener. So I think they get back and they get a win tonight. So I'm going to go Montreal on the money line, minus 130. And I just have a quick one for Leafs and Oilers. I'm going to go over 7. That's plus 100. I think, look at the goal scoring ability on both ends of the ice. Look at the goaltending ability on both ends of the ice. I think it over is a safe bet. And I'm going to go revenge angle with Zach Hyman, who's on a 55-goal pace this year to get a goal plus 115.
And maybe feeling a little aggrieved that there's so many Leafs at the All-Star game and he's not at the All-Star game. I'm kind of thinking the same thing. I think there's going to be a lot of goals tonight. But I also think it could be a tough night for the Maple Leafs. I'm going to take the Oilers team total over 4.5 is the alt line plus 180. I think it could be a high-scoring night. I think it could be a long night for the Leafs traveling to Edmonton against an Edmonton team that is hot and looking for revenge, I think, always against the Maple Leafs. And then looking ahead here, we got NFL lines for divisional weekend. We got the Ravens, 9-point favorites, hosting the Texans. We got the 49ers, I think 9.5 now, hosting Green Bay. Detroit, a 6-point favorite over Tampa Bay. And Buffalo, 2.5. Hosting Kansas City. The thing that I like the most from these like initial lines is the Lions. I think, you know, Baker Mayfield obviously had a great night against Philly, but Philly and Detroit could not be more different right now. The Lions are playing as hard as you could see or you could imagine from a football team, and we saw Philly absolutely mail it in last night. I think the Lions are going to the NFC Championship game. I think they win by margin this weekend.
Yep, I like the Lions and the Bills, of course. Those are my two favorite. Sunday's going to be a very exciting day. We do have the Kraken game that night at 9 p.m., so you and I will be grinding hard. Let's take a quick break. Renata Fast will join us on the other side on the Fan Pregame.
Big opinions and in-depth conversations covering the Leafs, Jays, Raptors, and the NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Fan Pregame, Sportsnet 360 and Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Justin and Ailish. We're excited because in a couple weeks, it's going to be the NHL All-Star Weekend, and PWHL is getting a 3-on-3 showcase, which is going to have players from all six of the teams. The inaugural season, of course, they're going to play in a 20-minute game. Rosters are stacked. They've got 146 Olympic and 46 World Championship medals and 17 NCAA Division I championships. So, you want the hardware? It's on the ice. You want the storylines? It's there. They've got some pretty interesting makeup with the rosters. We mentioned it yesterday. We've got Hillary Knight and Marie-Philippe Poulin on the same team. That never happens. But it's going to be an absolute blast. And it's just a couple weeks away. Someone that's going to be headlining that, Renata Fast, joins us from Toronto PWHL team. Renata, how's it going?
I'm good. How are you?
We're good. We're excited to have you on. We're fired up because we're getting, you know, a couple weeks into the PWHL season. We're starting to, like, understand, you know, the rosters and the energy around it. But I want to go back to day one just to start with you because I got to be at the inaugural PWHL game, of course, on New Year's Day. And, I mean, I got emotional sitting in the stands watching, right? It was something that I think we can all agree was a long time coming, but very... very special, and you got to be a part of it. So tell me about that day, the understanding that this was the start of something brand new and something that you had worked so hard with your teammates and those that came before you and those that will come in the next generation.
Yeah, it was such an incredible day. I mean, the support we got at Mattame was incredible, but it was so interesting, like heading to the rink that day, it didn't feel like a typical game day, like those game day nerves that you normally get. Like the nerves were different. It was like almost like the anticipation of this moment and just like realizing how exciting this is for the sport of hockey, for women in sport, for every fan, for the future, for the generations that didn't get to play in this game. So oh my God, there was so many emotions. And to be honest with you, like, the game was kind of a blur because of that. But when it really hit me was the next night when I got to sit on my couch and I got to watch Ottawa and watch their home opener and like just kind of process all those emotions. So, yeah, it was a phenomenal day, the start of something so special.
So what does it feel like right now? We're a couple weeks into this thing, obviously, three games under your belt. Not the greatest start for Toronto, but, you know, there's like there's the emotions of the start, right? And then there's settling into, hey, this is the new life. This is the new professional athlete life that I'm living. So how is that life?
Yeah, that's exactly it. Like you said, the results haven't been there like Toronto, what we want, but there's so much adjustment that's happening. And this environment of training every single day and players, you know, like leaving their careers behind. We have people on our team that have been cops for a couple of years. They've been firefighters, they've been nurses, they've been teachers. So we have people who are coming in and just kind of like getting used to this professional landscape. It's been so incredible to just come to the rink, have our meals there, have all the training stuff there we need to be at our best. And it's been amazing. And the best part about it is for the Toronto team is we have such a great group. And despite the results not being, you know, what we want, we're all staying connected. And that's what you can ask for in a team. No one's going off on their own and being individual. Everyone's sticking to the process. And like, we're pretty confident the results are going to come. But it's been just like a phenomenal, has surpassed all our expectations from a professional standpoint. It's truly been incredible.
Yeah, I've been able to talk to a couple of friends, of course, former teammates that are a part of the PWHL. And the word I keep hearing is professionalism. It's so professional. It's different this time. So tell me, like, where you've seen the differences, where you've seen the strides, because we've gone through this before. There's been different leagues, and this time it does feel different, but you're living it. Like, where are you seeing, okay, this is the real deal. This is going to work. This is going to last. Like, what kind of little things make that for you where you trust that this is the real thing?
Yeah, there's multiple things, but I think you can look at it from like an athlete's perspective. And for the players, like the biggest transformation for us has just been the daily training environment, like going to the rink every day. And like the money is there to support staff who are experts in their field who can provide us with their expertise. So we have strength and conditioning coaches. We have multiple medical staff. You know, we have video coaches, really qualified coaches. And so from an athlete perspective, it's just, it's the environment we get to train in every single day. It's the food we get to eat. Like, we can focus on hockey. All 28 players in our hub right now can focus on hockey and try to be the best players they possibly can be. But the area that I think, like, when I look and I'm like, wow, this thing is going to grow, is just the media coverage and the investment that the ownership has put in to ensure that this game is being seen. You know, you saw how many broadcast networks are broadcasting our games, but then it's free on YouTube for anyone in the world to watch. Like, it's so accessible. Just the visibility is going to allow it to grow for years to come. And that's something we've lacked in previous leagues, and we finally have it. And it's such a cool thing to turn on the TV and be like, yeah, like every night I'm like, is there a PWHL game tonight? Like, I want to watch.
So I want to go back to the draft, Renata, because you're one of the designated players for Toronto, but you're watching the draft unfold, I'm sure, and probably sitting on the edge of your seat while that's going on. Of course, Toronto takes Jocelyn the Rocks, who you play with in a pairing with the first overall pick, at least in terms of Toronto's draft picks, their first round pick. What was that like, consuming the draft? What was it like seeing Jocelyn go off the board to Toronto early? What were the emotions you were dealing with while you were seeing your team come together?
Yeah, it was really, really cool, but such a nerve-wracking day. Like, we were with, like, as we had a Hockey Canada training camp the week before, or actually, yeah, a couple days before the draft happened. And there's just so much uncertainty for players, just so many nerves to figure out, like, where they're going to be, where they're going to be settled. But it was really cool to actually watch the draft unfold. I think the draft was like at least 5 hours long, but like, yes, I was like engaged the entire 5 hours, just so curious where my friends, where previous teammates were going to end up playing, and like how the teams were going to come together. There was so much talent and depth within the draft that, like, even when we got to the later rounds, it was like, how's that person still on the board? So it was really cool, really unique to see Toronto come together. There was a lot of familiarity with who we were drafting. I knew a lot of the players, so that was nice to be able to support the ones that were there and reach out to the ones that weren't there in person. But really cool to kind of see that for the first time, all six teams being configured right there in front of you.
Was there a non-Toronto team that was coming together live that you were like, whoa, there's a lot of talent on that team?
Honestly, there was a lot of teams like that, but I would say the one that, like, really everyone kept being like, wow, was New York. Mm-hmm. Because I think there was so much uncertainty around the New York, like where were they going to play out of? Like, New York's very expensive. Like, the GM came in late. Mm-hmm. So I think that there was a lot of question marks around New York's market. And then to Ella Shelton going there really early in the draft, it was like, oh my gosh, okay, like, Ella's going to New York. Like, there's so much uncertainty. But then they just kept drafting great picks. Jamie Bourbonnais, Jesse Eldridge, Jill Sonnier. Like, it just kept going. So it was kind of like, wow, like, New York's coming together really nice. And I'm happy for those girls that they have, like, a great network of players that they get to play with. And I mean, you've seen it on the ice. They feel like they're like the young kids on the block, mm-hmm, that have something to prove. So they were fun to play against, and yeah, they have a great squad.
You can watch New York and Montreal in about 20 minutes on Sportsnet. That's going to be a great one. Of course, Montreal at home, and they had a tough OT loss on their inaugural home opener. All the home openers have been incredible. Of course, like, I just can't believe how much desire there is and how much participation there is. And as you mentioned, the media coverage, it's been incredible. I want to ask you about the makeup of the Toronto team, because as you mentioned, a lot of veterans, a lot of experience you've had with some of the girls, but there's some rookie youth that really haven't had a professional experience. And then there's some international talent, which has been so exciting to see. It's not just a North American game anymore. You're seeing players from all over. For you, how difficult or how much of a fun challenge, in a sense, is it to create that chemistry? You're a leader on the team. You got to get everyone together and get the ball rolling pretty quickly. And having Troy Ryan, obviously, as a head coach with the familiarity, how much has that helped as well?
Yeah, it's helped a ton. We have a great relationship with Troy, being able to build that over the last couple of years with the national team. So mm-hmm. even with Gia Kingsbury as the GM, like, we know what they expect. We know, like, the culture they like to create, open door policy, this and that. So as a leader, that's very comforting to know kind of their expectations and how they communicate. But it's been super fun to get to know all the girls. I feel like I've never felt like old, and I don't feel old on this group, but then you hear them start talking about certain things and you're like, oh my gosh, I'm a lot older than you. But we have a good mix of vets and rookies, and we all keep saying as a team, we're like, we have like a mixed bag of like personalities, but everyone is like so accepting of who each person is. Like everyone's coming to the rink each day and completely being themselves and like their true selves. And it's just only like amplifying our locker room. Like it's such a fun environment to be in. And I think because we have some vets, because we have some rookies, it's helping with that kind of like fun atmosphere. There's bringing a little bit of everything.
It's funny. I know what you mean when you say that you feel old, because like, they're like, let's go to the Maddie. And you're like, what? That place? Like, you're not going to the Maddie. That doesn't exist still. Like, you start to know your age cap a little bit when, you know, you're 30 and they're 20 something years old.
Yeah. I'm like, define what going out means. Cause I like, what does that
like
mean?
To
nowadays?
A wine bar? No, they're like, let's go to a frat at U of T. And you're like, no, that's not our scene.
What outfit do I wear to this?
No, I feel you. When I was there watching, it's fun because there's new players that have never had an opportunity to play professionally. So, I'm looking them up on like elite prospects, learning about them, which is really exciting because I'm not that far removed, but I haven't played with a lot of players before that are coming out of the league. And I think it's exciting, like not to look ahead too much, but next year there's already going to be this influx of young talent coming out of university, coming from overseas. Like it almost feels like we already need to expand, right? It already feels like there should be more opportunity because six teams, you know, there's only so many spots. Are you excited for the idea that maybe there will be more places to play, there'll be more markets to approach, and more young talent that's going to keep us, keep you guys getting in shape still? Because, you know, they're going to be 21 years old. It's scary.
I know it is. It's pretty cool. Like we've never had an environment where these players can come out of college and like so many of them are going to keep playing. Like in the past, I know you know Ailish, like so many girls are like, I'm like, they're not even at their peak of them as an athlete, but they're like, it's not sustainable for me to keep playing. So they give up. But now so many more players are going to be entering that draft and continuing their careers on and getting better every year. So yeah, there's going to be an influx of new players every single year. And I think it's inevitable that there will be expansion at some point. Mm-hmm. I think it's smart to start very highly competitive. But at the end of the day, like there's players coming up and we need somewhere for them to play. So whether it's like a feeder system somehow, I know there's a league in Sweden players can go play in right now, but just finding a way that more players can continue their careers and like have aspirations after college to, even if they don't make it initially, to get into that league in a couple of years because they haven't even hit their peak yet.
So Boston, Toronto tomorrow. Toronto's still looking for its first victory. I mean, Boston sounds like the right sort of city to get said victory over, but give us a little bit of a scouting report. What does Toronto have to deal with Boston tomorrow night?
Well, they have a lot of offensive power. Yeah. I'm thinking of like Jamie Lee Rattray, Hillary Knight. Oh man, they have like so much talent. I'm really good friends with Jamie Lee Rattray. Mm-hmm. So anytime her and I match up against each other, we're really good friends, but we're so highly competitive in practice. So like anytime we play against each other, it's always a battle. So I'm looking out for that one. But I think the Toronto, we just need to, stay connected as a group of five, even from the goaltending out. And I think our forecheck's going to be so important heading into tomorrow's game, getting on top of their D, turning pucks over. And then we've been pretty perimeter with our game so far. So finding ways to kind of get inside the dots, get some grade A scoring chances, and just playing solid defensively because Boston's got a lot of firepower up front.
One thing I wanted to ask you about, because I've talked to a lot, which is exciting, a lot of fans that are new to the game, right? Because the accessibility is so easy just to turn it on. But they've been so surprised and encouraged by the physicality. I haven't had a chance to talk to all of the players yet in terms of what their perspective is, but it's much different than when we played in the CWHL. It's much different than when I watch the Olympic or the international. So how are you enjoying being able to just crush girls in the corner? Because it's been fun.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not complaining. I think it's been incredible. I think it's great for our game. The fact that I don't have a penalty yet is surprising 4 games in. But I think it's a very great step for our game. And there's going to be growing pains with it, like figuring out from the referee's perspective, like what is a penalty, what is not a penalty. Same with for the players. And I think like there's a lot of players that are so used to contact, but there's players that aren't used to contact and they need to like, just kind of learn about getting hit and how to position their body. But once we get that going, like, I think it's going to just allow our game to the pace of the play to pick up. There's be more enjoyment for fans. Cause I think right now, like it's annoying when there's so many calls and it's so inconsistent. Mm-hmm. And if we can just like have contact and everyone be on the same page with it within a certain line, like I think it'll make the game more enjoyable for the players, for the fans. And yeah, I've really enjoyed it so far. I think it's helped our game for sure.
Yeah, it's the first game was like, what is that? Did I miss a rule change? Like these girls are out for blood, and then it's continued. So
were you expecting that? Like I know mm-hmm. you guys were collaborative when it comes to the rule change and how the game was going to be played, but was there an adjustment for you? Or is like, oh, this first 5 minutes is very physical. I now know the standard and I'm going to apply that.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. So we had preseason games in Utica and we had heard that the PWHL was going to bring in like the AHL loop of referees to ref some of our games throughout the season. And we were like, okay, like they'll probably let us play a little bit more. And I was actually talking to my husband who used to play pro and he was like, yeah, in the men's game, like they'll call any stick penalty, like any slash on the hands, like any tap, like automatically called, but like, they're probably going to let you play a little bit more body. So Utica, the first game, like the game was physical and we're like, hey, like, this is awesome. They're going to let us play. Mm-hmm. So heading out to the rink for the first game on January 1st, like I take a look at the refs. I wasn't sure who was reffing our games. And we had a couple male refs out there with a couple women ref. And like as soon as the game started, like you could just tell they were going to let things go and you gauge it from there. And yeah, so I think it's going to be great for our game, but it's exciting.
Last one for you, Renata. We're talking to Renata Fast, of course, of PWHL Toronto, and will be a PWHL All-Star at the showcase in just a couple weeks away. I know it's not your first NHL All-Star weekend, but this is a special one because you're with the PWHL. You got your 3-on-3 tournament, which will be an absolute blast. Well, what are you looking forward to this time around? Because it is not the first time, but it is a different time for you.
Yeah, there's a couple of things, but the fact that it's in Toronto is really cool. I had the opportunity to go in San Jose and then in St. Louis and incredible experiences. But we're in like the hockey hotbed in Toronto, like just to think of the fan fest and the interactions that you're going to have. That's exciting. And obviously playing for the Toronto team, there'll be some extra eyes on the Toronto players. Yeah, but I'm really looking forward to also representing our league because this is before we were representing Canada and USA, but now this is an opportunity to gain more exposure for our league. So it's going to be, you know, a lot of buzz around that, which is exciting.
Yeah, we'll keep hyping it up for the next couple of weeks, but I'll see you tomorrow night. I'm an inaugural season ticket holder of the Toronto team. So I'm looking forward to seeing you guys.
You're being
every
honored,
week.
Aren't you?
Yeah, we might be getting like a...
So look out for the ceremony.
The team is giving the season ticket members like a gift at some of the games, and I think I might be up tomorrow. So get us a goal, give me a wave. and it's been amazing so far. So congratulations. I know all the hard work that goes on behind the scenes, Renata, so I know you've been so important for that. So enjoy the rest of this season and keep crushing it, and we'll see you at the All-Star game as well.
That's awesome. Thanks so much for having me, guys.
No problem. Thanks so much for your time. Renata Fast, of course, with PWHL Toronto and a PWHL All-Star. That 3-on-3 showcase is a couple weeks away. February 1st. It's going to be a great, great night. We're excited to be down there. She's on Team Cloths, which has a lot of Toronto and Canadian talent. Aaron Ambrose, who used to play here in the market, of course, you know, a friend of mine. Jocelyn LaRocque, so Renata's D partner, will be there as well on that team. Taylor Heise, who we're hoping to chat with next week, so stay tuned. She was the first overall pick, of course, at the PWHL. Sarah Nurse, a fan favorite in the area. Laura Stacey, my best friend. So I'm definitely on Team Kloss, not just because we interviewed Renata.
You guys both laughed when you mentioned the physicality in the CWHL.
Mm.
Why was that? Was it like...
No
bueno? Nothing?
No bueno is a pretty great way to put it. Like if... And I was in CWHL, for those that didn't know, not the top line player. I was more of a grinder. I'd be a PK, you know, fourth line.
You got one career goal under your belt.
Fourth line grind. So I would be out there to spark the energy. Like, hey, we need a you know, a shift in momentum. So I was, you know, I was a fourth line grinder. Anywho, but you had to be very careful about energy and physicality because they were very different. Like if you went in there and you tried to, you know, get hard on the forecheck, you couldn't, you know, just make a small physical bump off the defenseman.
You had to toe the line.
But when I watch these PWHL games, I am just shocked because there's open ice hits. And some of them, like I think as she mentioned, Renata, that they're still trying to figure out what the standard is. And the other thing is when you're playing women's hockey growing up, you're not taught how to properly give and receive checks, right? Because there is no hitting. So it can be a bit abrupt to all of a sudden have full contact. Like, it's not the NHL level full contact, but there is more physicality in this game than I've ever seen. And it there needs to be a bit of a figuring out process about, you know, okay, what is and what isn't accepted, as Renata said, making sure the referees all have the same standard. But I mean, I get messages from people that are just watching Limbs Hockey for the first time, and they just cannot believe how much, I guess, more exciting and more enticing it is to watch that level of physicality, because it's always been something that we've had. We just haven't been able to exercise it properly. So it's a big difference from the CWHL.
Was that like a major, major point of frustration when you were playing? Like, is everyone like on board?
No. I never had like a, I wish I could crush this girl in the corner.
But like if it's ticky tack and you try to get on a forecheck and there's just some like incidental contact.
Don't think I ever had like reservations or frustrations about it. I think it definitely changed the game into way more fast paced and skill based, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if you didn't have the speed to get around somebody or the stick ability to dangle somebody, now you have to, you might get laid out. Like, you might get rubbed off in the corner, like crunched into the corner, right? But before, you could just use your speed and skill to get around people. So it adds an element of the game that, you know, I didn't really have much of, but it's been really exciting to watch. We got that big game, by the way, in 10 minutes here, New York at Montreal. So looking forward to it. This is going to be a really great weekend. I think the girls deserve their own platform, which is exciting that NHL has given it to them, a full three-on-three game with the best of the best. So if you haven't had an opportunity to watch it, get on board. There's lots of great hockey to be played still.
Yeah, looking forward to it. It's going to be a great weekend, and there are so many events that we're going to try to get to. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's definitely one of them. It's going to be a great weekend. We got time for a little A-list action. Do you want to throw some stuff at us here?
Yeah. Let's look backwards and maybe forwards to the Bills game yesterday and the Bills game on Sunday. It was obviously a snowpocalypse. It was absolutely hysterical watching fans have to shovel themselves out of the seats, but that's what Bills Mafia does. But I wonder for you, was it fair to be throwing snowballs at opposing players when, you know, the play is over or isn't over? Anyway, what is your thought on
snowballs?
That's the
key distinction. I mean, yes, we were on the air during that game, and I have seen snowballs being thrown at players before in snowy games. But, like, if it's happening during the play, I mean, it's clearly that can't go down.
I agree with that.
But I will say, once the play is over, and if the Pittsburgh Steelers scores a touchdown and is just pelted with snowballs, mm-hmm, like, I'm all for that.
Okay, good. And you know, you're preaching to, like, the proper choir here, but I think for sure...
Well, you'd be in the front row throwing the snowballs.
I would have definitely thrown a snowball. Like, I mean, I'm not going to lie. I jumped through a table last time I was at a Bills mm-hmm game. So.
Was it on fire?
No, that's one thing I wouldn't do. That's, to me, it's just one step too far into Bills Mafia that I'm not ready for.
I know they were throwing snow, and I know there was snow, rather, still in the stands.
The field looked amazing, though, eh?
The field did look amazing, but the seats also looked clean. It was like just the warmth of everyone's butt was like just like basically cleared the snow. It felt like, or it looked like, at least in the second half, that it was kind of clear in the stands and on the field.
We've got to check the weather forecast for Sunday, of course.
They don't need shovelers. They just need people to sit down.
They do, but they had to get into the building somehow. The Chiefs in Buffalo, it'd be the Chiefs, like, their first road playoff game. Like, you know, Patrick Mahomes, it's going to be a test. Obviously, these two going head-to-head. You've got the Swifties versus the Bills fandom. Sometimes you're you're in both, and that's difficult.
Well, you tell me, is Taylor Swift one for Buffalo?
It's hilarious. I've seen all these memes now where it's like Taylor Swift showing up to like the best hotel. Yeah, motel in Buffalo. Yeah,
let's not diminish Buffalo.
No, I love. You know, I love.
I know that's funny.
You
but
know,
like,
I love Buffalo.
Do you think she's going to be in Buffalo?
Yeah, of course. She can hang in Buffalo.
But do you think the Chiefs can hang in Buffalo?
No.
No.
I think they get exposed. But you think I'm going to go against the Bills?
But I mean, like, even if you're not going to go against the Bills, you could have some
worry.
You're very confident, though.
No, I'm not. I'm so extremely nervous.
Terrified.
Yeah, the stomach is a pit, but we have many a days to tee that up. It's going to be a great weekend ahead. So we do agree snowballs when the play is not going on is accepted.
100%.
Perfect. I'm glad we're on board for that. I had a little bit more, but you know what? We're running out of time. So let's tee up what we got tonight in case you missed it. New York at Montreal in the PWHL. That's in about 5 minutes on Sportsnet. A little later, Arizona and Calgary on Sportsnet 1. That's 9 p.m. regionally as well. Toronto take on the 10 straight winners, the Edmonton Oilers. You got McDavid versus Matthews. We think that's going to be a goal-scoring bonanza. I'm hoping it is. And then, you know, the Maple Leafs obviously got a very heavy week ahead on the West Coast. And, you know, people are saying Sheldon Keefe's, you know, maybe coaching for his job. I don't know if we can get there yet, but tonight will be a very, very big test.
Yeah, I think we're going to learn a lot about the Leafs. And I guess we can learn a lot about the Oilers tonight as well.
Yeah, are the Maple Leafs like the third best team in Canada? Well, I'm not just, you know, they got a couple tests this
week.
To figure it out. All right, that was the Fan pregame. Thanks, everybody. We'll be back tomorrow. Have a great night.